This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri. Annie Finch is here today with her spells and her lullabies and her beautiful goddesses. And here's a poem for Annie.
Blessing on the poets. Patient earth diggers, impatient fire makers, hungry word takers, and roving sound lovers, sharers and savers, musers and achers, you who are open to hide or uncover, time keepers and haters, wake sleepers, sleep wakers. May language's language, the silence that moves under each word, move you over and over, turning you wondering back to surprise.
Annie Finch, who has been with us as a pillar of poetry, carrying forth language with beauty, but some new generation may be just finding you for the first time, Annie, when we're talking to a whole new world of people. And if I think of Annie Finch, I think of women, formalism, I think of metrics, I think of performance, I think of spells, lullabies. Tell me, how do you describe yourself?
Thank you for that wonderful question, because it was actually not simple to kind of to describe myself, but now I have done it. Poetry Witch. I am Poetry Witch. On Twitter, I'm Poetry Witch. On Instagram, I'm the Poetry Witch. My community is the Poetry Witch community. My most recent book is the Poetry Witch, Little Book of Spells. So I have found it. I bring it all together. The rhythm and the poetry.
You got Witch a good name. You retrieved Witch from the cauldrons, right? And made it an altar for the gods. Let's hear another poem. Annie Finch.
So, and yes, of course, my birthday is also on Halloween, which gave me practice being a witch from early on. And here's a poem about my birthday, which in the original early Celtic holiday at this time of the year is Samhain. Samhain. In the season, leaves should love, since it gives them leave to move through the wind towards the ground they were watching as they hung. Legend says there is a seam stitching darkness like a name. Now, when dying grasses veil earth from the sky in one last pale wave, and autumn dies to bring winter back and then the spring, we who die ourselves can peel back another kind of veil that hangs among us like thick smoke. Tonight, at last, I feel it shake. I feel the nights stretching away, thousands long behind the days, till they reach the darkness where all of me is ancestor. I move my hand and feel a touch move with me. And when I brush my young mind across another, I am with my mother's mother. Sure as footsteps in my waiting self, I find her. And she brings arms that have answers for me, intimate, awaiting bounty. Carry me. She leaves that trail through a shudder in the veil and leaves like amber where she stays, a gift for her perpetual gaze.
The voice of Annie Finch. I'm Grace Cavalieri. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. We're on remote. I wonder how you can read that without crying, because it is so... It harks back to so much that aches in us, and it's like floating. Tell me, what is the use of metrics and rhythm in a poem? What, that is a poem that we could teach for rhythm. What's the use of metrics?
Metrics is a way to channel the divine energy for which poetry was originally renowned. The reason that poets have been revered in cultures for millennia and millennia, right? Grace, the way we love poetry, the way we adore it, I don't think it's just for the figures of speech and the expressiveness. It's actually the rhythm, the techniques of rhythm, which for the 35,000 years before the invention of writing, rhythm was the way you could remember everything, the history, the legends. So it was developed by the poets. The poets remembered all these things in their heads, poems that took days to recite, and the rhythm made it possible. And I think we all still have this in our bodies physically, this connection to the rhythm. So what it does, it brings us out of the left brain where we read prose and we think logically, and it brings us into the right brain where we have our intuition, and it connects us with the spirit and the heart and the body. So it's the metrics that actually make poetry do its magic.
The spirit, the heart, and the body, my three favorite organs. Annie, do you think you're alone in this? Do you find yourself on Mount Olympus and a little bit chilly these days? Because we go to you to find this, and sometimes we go to you and there's not many more we can go to.
This, I guess it's true, but you know the beauty of it, Grace, you mentioned new generations. So, you know, when I was a professor up until about 10 years ago, and then I started going online. And for a while, I thought, well, the poets are over here and the witches are over here. And I started these different online communities, and eventually I couldn't handle that anymore. So I combined them into Poetry Witch. And I thought I was alone. Not true. So many people are finding it now. And I have an online community, which has almost 1,000 women from around the world in it, women and gender nonconforming people. And so a lot of poets turn out to be witchy, and a lot of witches turn out to be poets. And the thing that unites them, that they're excited about, is metrics. So the rhythm is starting to speak to people. I think the slam poetry has helped make it more accessible.
Oh, that is such a good answer. That is an unexpected answer. Annie Finch, unexpected and expected. Thankfully, another poem.
So exciting. Oh, my goodness. Well, this one is called Witches, speaking of. Witches shall believe in earth, birth in body, darker birth. Power above, power below, witches shall find high and low. Fire and air and water and land, power grows everywhere she stands. Power before and power after, witches shall believe in laughter. Birth in spirit, center, love, witches shall believe and move.
You know, you once said, and we see, that spells are rhymes. They automatically rhyme. Now, did you further that in the world, or is that something that you can get behind academically?
You mean the way spells in popular...
Spells always rhyme. Oh, your spells rhyme.
Often they do. Not always, but yes, you are right. They often do. I find that, again, I want people to read my poems aloud. They are really meant to be read aloud. And that's because of the connection with the mind, the body, the heart, and the spirit all together. And I think the other thing is there's the metrical diversity to it. So the different meters. When I teach, I don't only teach iambic meter, which is what most poets know nowadays. I have a variety of 5 different main meters that I teach. And so each of these meters has its own kind of quality, its own emphasis. And so I think the rhyme helps you to distinguish the different meters. It helps you really mark the line endings. And it's a wonderful tool. I don't always use it. I often will use meter without rhyme. But when it's a spell, I think the rhyme really adds to it.
Well, when we hear about it, there's nothing better than hearing it itself. So let's have another poem by Annie Finch.
Moons for Our Daughters. Moons that are linking our daughters' choices and still more beginnings, threaded alive with our shadows. These are our bodies' own voices, powers of each of our bodies, threading, unbroken, begetting flowers from each of our bodies. These are our spiraling borders, carrying on your beginnings, moving through shadows to daughters, moving inside our beginnings, moon of our daughters and mothers.
Beautiful. Do you know that you are a goddess for women? Do you know that, or has it come around to you yet, that women consider you a goddess and that they worship the things you say and they have found a voice? They have found a voice for themselves. It's pretty phenomenal in one lifetime. How long have you been writing?
Since I was 7 years old. My mom was a poet as well.
Mm-hmm. So, and tell me about that little seven-year-old. Tell me about her. What was she like?
She was quite quiet and shy. There was a forsythia bush in the backyard, and I used to climb inside it. It made like a cave, and I would go in there and have my own little private temple.
We need that for a cover of a book. Annie inside of a forsythia bush. How cool.
I'm writing a memoir now. I've been writing it for about 12 years, Grace, but I think I'm finally getting to it. I'm finally finding it. And when I was little, when I was 7 or 8, I began to have a recurring dream of a woman who I thought of as like the silver-haired woman. And she never spoke to me, but she would appear in my dreams, this beautiful goddess-like woman with this long silver hair. And she was always like doing something interesting. And I just would see her go by in my dream. And then I start the memoir with that because I feel that I actually now am her. Like,
oh, you got a picture of yourself before you became yourself. That went through my body. Let's have another poem, Annie Finch. Do your magic for the Library of Congress.
Let's see this one. I feel the beauty of the whole goddess approach to life is that the goddess is everywhere. It's in the physical, it's in the body. And every woman really is a goddess. And I believe that the connections among women are very sacred and are the origin, you know, of what makes humanity really special. I believe that is among women, the circles when women come together, the magic that's created there. And I'm so happy to be a channel of that. And in my online community, poetrywitch.org, Poetry Witch Community, I try to create that feeling of the magic that's created when women come together, including gender nonconforming people and everyone who identifies as women. Brave Women's Amulet. Women have voices it's time to believe in. Brave women's words spoken out, clear and steady, move us through generous ways of achieving. Women have voices it's time to believe in, braiding sweet worlds. This brave, loving weaving is singing our lives back, and women are ready. Women have voices. It's time to believe in brave women's words spoken out clear and steady.
Clear and steady. Let's have another.
Ooh, I love how you love poetry, Grace.
It's
so wonderful.
It's my life force. It's my life force.
It's so beautiful. Okay. Here's a love poem. Two bodies. Two bodies balanced in mass and power move in a bed through the dark. Under the earliest human hour, their night rocks like an ark. They reach through the ceilings of the night, tall as animals. Through their valleys bends the light of their fertile hills. Two bodies breathe their close hellos through interlocking pores, while that hush of beating slows, held by many oars. Heart over heart, leg over leg, trading still breaths until heart over heart and seed into egg, night holds two bodies still.
Now, you once said that a poem finds you. You don't find the poem. Now, that was a very complicated and ambitious piece of writing. So what was the process there? How much of that was in your body? How much of that did you scribble down in the middle of the night? How did you put that one together?
That's a really great question, because that one, well, I've been married for 36 years and my husband understands that I write poems at all hours of the day and night, including in the middle of making love, which is exactly what happened there. I swear, I don't remember what stage of it we were at, but I started writing it down exactly like that. I don't think that was ever changed a syllable.
This is the first for the poet and the poem. This is the first for the poet and the poem. We have been on air for 45 years without interruption. This is the first time we've had a poem before the moment of ecstasy.
Oh my goodness. Well,
so congratulations, Annie. You get the gold. You get the trophy.
You're proud of being a witch. As the great witch Doreen Valenti wrote, all acts of love and pleasure are the goddess's rituals.
Your husband must be extremely understanding.
He is.
Well, Annie Finch is here. This is the poet and the poem plus sex. And we're talking about women. We're talking about the spirit, the heart, and the mind. What could be better to talk about? Tell me what you do with what you feel when you see something like the earth drying up and the rivers drying up and war wiping out women and children. How do you accommodate that to turn it to language?
Such a wonderful question, Grace. Such a great question. And, you know, I tried for a long time to write about these things. Actually, speaking of my husband, he's a solar power activist and has been an environmental activist for a long time. And so I think about these things all the time. Of course, it's heartbreaking. Nature is my religion in many ways as a witch, earth-centered spirituality. And I remember once I gave a reading and someone said to me afterwards, you know, you must write about climate change, kind of like the woman in Akhmatova, the famous story where the woman said to her in the breadline, can you write about this? And she said, yes, I can. And I tried to write about climate change after I told her that I would. And, you know, I did for a while. I wrote some laments and elegies and tried to channel the grief. It's never worked for me to produce good poetry. And I feel that, you know, as a devotional poet, as a goddess poet, I have to always look for the higher energy, the more beautiful energy. So the approach that I take now, when I feel that kind of rage and frustration and grief, is to channel something really that's going to be bigger than that, more positive than that. And I do feel that the energy of women, when we get women finally together to really claim our power, which originally in their original societies, the matriarchal societies, which they all were originally, the evidence is very clear.
Your work is embodies nature. And as you say, you don't bemoan it. You bring a high frequency to it. Mm-hmm. So if you can bring a higher vibration to an evil act, that is the only thing we can do to ascend, to turn things to light, which is what poetry does, as you know, and what they're finding out about your work. I talk about the new generation because I'm talking to 14-year-olds that will be hearing your work. And we who have been in the poetry community for a long time see you as the citizen in the poetry world, you know, but the new ones, the new young women, the new poets have to hear more from you. So let's hear more from you.
Oh my goodness. Thank you. Let's see. I have a poem I wrote when I was in college, actually the title of this book, but first I'm going to do another one. This one is going to be on my memorial. So I have my memorial all picked out. It's going to be in Portland, Maine, in the beautiful Evergreen Cemetery there. And it was total serendipity how it happened. I love to go to poets' graves. I've had beautiful experiences at Robert Frost's grave in Bennington, at Yeats's Tower, which is kind of grave-like. And I was good friends with this wonderful man who collected poets' graves and went to like 400 of them, Walter Scold. He actually came with me to my grave in Portland. He's gone now, but he pronounced, yes, this would be a very good grave. And it was a wonderful serendipitous piece of luck how I found it. I won't go into the details, but it was clearly meant to be. So this is going to be carved on the monument, which already exists in the center of this place. And there's going to be a labyrinth looking out at the forest. And this is going to be there. It's called Walk With Me. Walk with me just a while, body of sunlight. body of grass, surface of trees. Head bending to the earth we have tasted, body of death, surface of leaves. Sinking hooves in the mud by the river, root of the live earth, live through my body. Sinking body, walk in me now.
Well, we're going to put that off for a very long time. I want everyone to know that you are the author of, well, more than 6 books, I think. You're working on your 7th or 8th book.
Poetry.
Yeah. And you have won many awards. Your books on poetics and poetry writing is a textbook, a poet's craft. You've edited a dozen books. Your PhD is from Stanford, and you were the director of Stone Coast MFA program in creative writing for maybe 10 years, I think. Mm-hmm. You've read and lectured at Berkeley, Harvard, Oxford. You were editor of the Poets on Poetry series for the University of Michigan and got the coveted Robert Fitzgerald's Award for the Lifetime Achievement. I just read his translation of Antigone, he's the foremost translator of Homer. So to bear his moniker is pretty great. And you have performed as Poetry Witch on many continents, founder of PoetryWitchCommunity.com, which is in right now alive and running. And the transformation that she writes is the transformation we experience. So let us have a final poem.
Such a joy to be here, Grace. I just want to say thank you for all you do for poetry, your amazingly wonderful show, and what an honor to be here. Well, here's one for Emily Dickinson. This one has been set to music by a wonderful composer, Laurie Lateman. When I cut words you never may have said into fresh patterns, pierced in place with pins, ready to hold them down with my own thread, they change and twist sometimes. Their color spins loose, and your spider generosity lends them from language that will never be free of you after all. My sampler reads, called back. It says, she scribbles out these screeds. It calls, she left this trace, and now we start in stitched directions that follow the leads I take from you as you take me apart. You wrote some of your lines while baking bread, propping the sheet of paper by the bins of salt and flour. So if your kneading led to words, you'd tether them as if in thin black loops on paper. When they sang to be free, you captured those quick birds relentlessly and kept a slow, sure mercy in your deeds, leaving them room to peck and hunt their seeds in the vast cages your vast iron art had made by moving books and lives and creeds. I take from you as you take me apart.
You know, only witches can expand time. So we have time for one more poem. Only witches can race with the clock and win. So please, one more, another final poem.
Well, let's see. This beautiful conversation. How about... Let's see, this was and you mentioned the younger people who may be listening. So in my book, Spells, we have early poems. It goes all the way back to when I was in college. And this was my first, well, actually this one here, yeah. I was going to read my first sonnet, but this one is perhaps even better. It's called Sapphics for Patience. And when I wrote this, I was a junior in college, and I guess I thought I had maybe it was about a boy I had a crush on, but now that I'm looking at it, I think it was really about becoming a poet and about finding my dreams. So to all the young people out there, just enjoy this one, especially maybe. Sapphics for Patience. Look there, something rests on your hand and even lingers, though the wind all around is asking it to leave you. Passing the windy passage, you have been chosen. Seed, Like dust or thistle, it sits so lightly that your hand in holding the trust of silk goes gentle. Seed like hope has come, making stillness. Wish in the quiet. If I stood there, wrapped by the windy passage, staring at my hand, which is always open, maybe hopeful not to compel you, I'd wish only for patience.
The voice of Annie Finch. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Sinipet Fund, Ravada Foundation, Avi Deshashani, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin is our engineer. I'm Grace Cavalieri.